The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents... Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, tokers and tokettes. It is Thursday, July 22nd, 2010, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks to all of our fans out there, especially our international fans who've been emailing us from Japan, Australia, Romania, the United Kingdom. Glad to have you here. Welcome to the next 60 minutes of news, talk, interviews, information, music, comedy, and more by, for, and about the cannabis community. Joining me here, running the studio, pushing the buttons, turning the knobs, and keeping the ship sailing straight, the pirate, Don Dragon.
The ship sailing straight. That's good, Russ.
Yes,
I, like
I just came up with that.
That's pretty good.
I liked it.
You know, I just realized we're about to introduce Cannabis Carry, and I don't have a cat call noise for that. So,
oh, my goodness. We'll just have to
We'll do it ourselves.
All right. Here she is, the beautiful Cannabis Carry.
Oh, I can't wait to hear this.
There we go. That's as good as I can do. Glad to have you here, Carrie. How are things going up there in beautiful Astoria?
Oh, it's gorgeous today. It's about 62 degrees and sunny and gorgeous.
All right. I've got to definitely get that email from Japan forwarded to you, Carrie. Lots of compliments. Uh-huh. A lot of compliments to you, too, for the great work you're doing with our news headlines.
Oh, that's great. I love the Japanese, and I love Japan.
I do, too.
Well, I just like to mention, though, that Carrie's new studio that she set up makes it sound like she's in here with us.
I know. It's beautiful.
It's great.
Good work, Carrie.
It's a little bit better, and actually, I still have a little bit more work to do, some hardware stuff that I'm going to need some technical help on, but we'll just keep improving. That's how we roll.
Yeah. Hey, I wanted to encourage everyone, too, if you want to communicate with us here at Normal Show Live, you know that you can send me an email at stash@normal.org, but you can also get in touch with Ganja John and Cannabis Carrie. John, what's your email, Twitter out there?
Twitter @GanjaJohn, and I will have a normal email address sooner here.
That's
sooner,
coming. And Carrie, are you on the old Twitter?
She resists.
No.
You're resisting the Borg? But, is that it?
No. But you're welcome to email me. I do respond to emails if you email me at cannabiscarry@gmail.com.
All right. Thank you so much. Well, Carrie, what's coming up on the news segment today?
Well, today, activists are up in arms over a decision made by a district judge in a San Diego case that very well may become a national test case. We're also going to learn about the compelling struggle of a Swiss cannabis activist, and we heard about it in yesterday's calendars here on The Stash. Well, it made the news last night, and we're going to find out about that on our first story in today's Hemp Headlines, so please stay with us.
All right, coming right up after the first break. Also on today's show, it is Groovin' Thursday. John Doe Radio stops in to bring us some great music from a group called Ground Up. The song's called Narcade, kind of a cool-looking title there. For our Leap segment, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, we've got a cop coming on to tell you we should legalize drugs. Major Neil Franklin, the head of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, will be here on today's show. We're going to replay that interview from May. I will be on a panel with Major Franklin on Saturday in Las Vegas at the Rio Hotel for Netroots Nation. We'll be streaming that on Saturday as well. And at the end of the show, radical rants and anti-Prop 19 arguments. I'll shoot them down one by one. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, or NORML, invites you to our 39th Annual National Conference, Legalization, Just Say Now, Thursday, September 9th through Saturday, September 11th, 2010, at the Opulent Governor's Hotel in downtown Portland.
The war on drugs has been a part of failure, and I think that we need to rethink and reform our laws about all laws.
Extend your visit through Sunday, September 12th, and you can also attend the 3-2-day Portland Hempstock, the largest outdoor cannabis and music festival in Oregon.
I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Just Say Now, the NORML National Conference, September 9th through 11th in Portland, Oregon.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's NORML News with Cannabis Carrie.
In Saginaw, Michigan, a second protest in less than a month was attended by more than over 100 protesters. Medical marijuana growers and patients held a demonstration against police raids on medical marijuana growers and patients in the Michigan county. The first rally was held a few weeks ago in the same place and only attracted a few dozen. That rally focused on Saginaw County Sheriff William Fetterspell. One of that organizer's rally organizer's home was raided only 4 days later. John Roberts says his home was targeted by Fetterspell because of his involvement with the rally. Roberts has not been charged with any crime and says that he was in full compliance with the law. The DEA did take his cannabis and all of his growing equipment during that raid. Roberts is convinced that the sheriff encouraged the DEA to come to his home. The sheriff denies any involvement. A similar raid took place in the home of Edwin Boyk a few days later. Boyk, as it turns out, did have too many plants. The 64-year-old Boyk, a medical marijuana patient, admits that he wasn't clear on the plant limits he could have, but says that the officers were only out to confiscate his valuable property. His anger has turned into a recall effort, and he began gathering signatures at yesterday's rally. Sheriff Fetterspell is calling the efforts hypocrisy, since activists are accusing him of not knowing the laws. He says that he is only enforcing the laws broken by some with medical marijuana cards. Fetterspell also said he would be happy to help anyone growing medical marijuana to make sure they are following the law. After the unnecessary raids on growers and patients, who will obviously be hurt by the confiscation of expensive growing equipment, I doubt many will take him up on that offer.
No kidding. Now, Carrie, you said in this story that the DEA was assisting in these raids?
Actually, it was the DEA. So it was the Saginaw police that were actually doing the assisting. It was a DEA agent raid.
Okay, so once again, we're seeing the DEA, after Attorney General Holder said that it was the federal government's policy to not waste precious resources of law enforcement going after legal patients in medical marijuana states that are obeying the law. Once again, that promise has been broken. So much for that hope and change that we voted for, huh? Mr. I inhaled frequently. That was the point. Look, this DEA raids have got to stop. Right now, Michelle Leonhardt, she was the assistant administrator for the DEA under the Bush administration. Right now, the Obama administration has nominated her to be the head of the DEA. Seems like when it comes to war that we continue to go on with the Bush appointees, right? Secretary of War Gates and now Leonhardt to head up the DEA. And furthermore, these Michigan sheriffs that think they're upholding the law, they really need to get involved, maybe go to a NORML meeting or two so they can meet some people who actually know what the law is. This excuse that they're just obeying the law is ridiculous, especially when you look at the state of Michigan. When Michigan passed its medical marijuana law in 2008, that was during the 2008 presidential election, mind you, every single county in Michigan passed medical marijuana. Medical marijuana passed in 83 out of 83 counties, even the counties that voted for John McCain, okay? The legalization of marijuana for medical purposes in the state of Michigan got more votes than President Obama did. It's clear that the people do not want sick and disabled people to be hassled by cops. I don't care if it's the county Mounties or the DEA. Leave the patients alone.
Wow, that's a perfect lead into our next story. A decision was made last week by U.S. District Judge Barry Moskowitz to deny San Diego County dispensary operator James Stacy's bid to get his charges dismissed. James Stacy operated a dispensary called Movement in Action in Vista, California. Last year on September 9th, during a sting operation called Operation Endless Summer, more than a dozen dispensaries were raided. Stacy was arrested after an undercover narcotics officer made an undercover buy from Stacy's dispensary. Stacy argued that all transactions at his collective met the legal standards of the state. He was charged with federal counts of illegally manufacturing and distributing marijuana. Stacy wanted the charges dismissed on grounds that President Barack Obama and Attorney General Eric Holder publicly commented last year that they would no longer target medical marijuana patients and providers in states where it has been legalized. Judge Moskowitz said that the Obama administration's statements and policy directive on medical marijuana laws were not a promise that the DEA would never raid a dispensary that was claiming to operate in compliance with state laws. Even more damaging for James Stacy, the judge also agreed with prosecutors that Stacy could not present a medical marijuana defense based on California's Prop 215 that allows medical marijuana use in the state. His lawyers will now be barred from using what they are calling the Obama said I could defense or entrapment, an official saying that you can do something and then arrest you for it. That ruling has drew much criticism from medical marijuana patients and advocacy groups. Karen Woodson, the director of government affairs for Americans for Safe Access, said that Moskowitz's ruling denied the accused of a defense in federal court and all but guaranteeing a conviction in spite of the defendant's compliance with state law. U.S. Representative Sam Farr from Carmel used the Stacy case to call for approval of H.R. 3939, the Truth in Trials Act, which he is sponsoring to allow defendants like Stacy to offer evidence in federal court that their use of medical marijuana was legal under state law. Stacy's trial for manufacturing and distributing is set to begin on August 30th.
What a shame. Once again, another situation where someone is obeying the medical marijuana laws of their state, in this case, California, and the federal government's going to come in and try to stop them, despite the promises of Holder and Obama to the contrary. Now, the defense they were trying to go for here, the technical term for it, is entrapment by or entrapment and estoppel. And what this is it's a legal theory that says if someone under the cloak of authority, a government figure, a law enforcement figure, tells you to do something and you reasonably believe that it was legal based on that person telling you to do something, you can't be busted for having done it. Well, they just threw that out. They just said, no, the promise here by Holder and Obama isn't really a promise, which I guess we could have all figured out from the evidence so far. The other thing that bugs me so much about this and the other cases that to come up is the fact that we're having to come up with something called a Truth in Trials Act. You know that part, you know, you always see it in the movies where the guy gets on the stand, he has to put his hand on the Bible, raise his other hand and say, I promise to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Well, that's not the way it works in federal court when it comes to drugs. According to Lucy's Law, when it comes to drugs, logic and reason are no excuse. And that's exactly what's happening here. Tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Accept that truth about you being sick and disabled. And accept that truth about you following the laws of your state. Don't tell that truth in federal court, because by God, it'd be hard for us to get 12 jurors to convict you. This is ridiculous. When the federal government basically has to railroad juries by putting blinders on them to lock up people that are obeying laws in their own state, this government is out of control. It is unjust, it is unfair, and we will fight against it till our dying breath.
Nice. An intense hunger strike from a Swiss cannabis activist is causing debate on how to handle the situation. Bernard Rapaz, who is currently in a burn hospital, has doctors and authorities arguing over whether to force feed him to keep him alive. Rapaz has been on a hunger strike since his imprisonment for growing and trading cannabis. Esther Kalbermatten, head of the governing body responsible for inmate care, made the decision to feed him only if he slips into an unresponsive coma after consulting the Swiss federal court. Now, this is the same court where Rapaz is hoping to win an appeal of his sentence of almost 6 years by conducting the hunger strike. Rapaz, who has been jailed on several occasions for growing cannabis, says he considers force feeding a violation of his human rights. That would only prolong the agony. You simply die later, he is said. He is more than 60 days into his hunger strike and told local newspapers that he felt like a flame that was slowly burning out. He said he was not afraid of dying and repeated that his hunger strike was aimed at legalizing cannabis. He would like to spend the rest of his jail sentence at home with a monitoring device. A member of Switzerland's National Advisory Commission on Biomedical Ethics has advised authorities that the doctors should allow Rapaz to die because Rapaz has signed papers that he does not want to be force-fed under any circumstances. He said it is important that the state take measures so it cannot be blackmailed against hunger strikers in general. It has become a very complex discussion among Swiss lawmakers given Switzerland's patients' rights history. The discussion has evolved into being about so much more than cannabis legalization, but the man at the center of the debate says that it is all about our cannabis heritage and our rights. He believes that because of his activities and openness with the media over what he described as the potential of cannabis uses, that he has become enemy number one, a man to destroy at all cost. He adds that going on a hunger strike was the only nonviolent weapon he has left since he is now behind bars.
Wow. All right. First of all, let me make sure we're clear on this. When you say he's in a Bern hospital, you mean B-E-R-N, the town in Switzerland, not B-U-R-N,
yes.
The condition of flame. Okay.
Yes, right. And actually, it was just this week that they moved him from the prison into the hospital because his conditioning is worsening so quickly at this stage.
Yeah, his grow lights didn't explode, people. He's not in the Bern ward.
Right, not the Bern ward, yes.
Thank you, Russ.
Exactly. Well, okay, so here you get this interesting comparison of what we consider someone's rights to be, right? Their human rights. Here we have a guy who was putting cannabis into his body. Non-toxic cannabis. Could not harm him. Cannabis. And for that, they feel they need to take away his freedom and lock him in a cage. So in response to that, he decides he's not going to eat in protest. And because of that, the authorities feel they have the right to violate his human rights and force him to eat through force feeding in a tube, right? You can't choose on your own to put cannabis in your body. But if you choose on your own to not put food in your body, they'll force it into you, by God. Does that seem crazy to anyone else? Am I the only one thinking this is odd that we would force feed someone, but we wouldn't allow them to use, because they're protesting not being allowed to use cannabis? We've gone through the looking glass here, force feeding people that are on, it just blows my mind. So we'll keep an eye on that story and all the other stories internationally as we can. Thank you, Carrie, for that. Also want to make some comments here for the folks checking out the show. You might have stopped by for the first time, or maybe you're a longtime listener and viewer and you're wondering what's going on with the chat. Just want to let you know we've made a change to the Normal Show Live chat room. It is now friends only. So if you're signed up on Stickam, create yourself an account and then send a friend request to Normal Show Live. We'll approve the friend request, and then you'll be able to get in the chat room. The reason being is that we needed to have some sort of accountability for the people that are coming into chat. We keep getting bombarded by immature, disrespectful people who sign on with these sock puppet accounts and start trashing and flaming the room. So it's friends only now. Just make sure you send that request through the Stickam account at Normal Show Live. We'll get you on there and we'll all be friends and pals and buddies and we can all chat together. It's been a nice change though.
Yeah, we can have nice mature chat.
Yeah, good conversations. It's been a great improvement. If you
ask
me.
It has been. It has been. It really has.
Also, again, for folks that may not have been listening all week, I will be in Las Vegas, Nevada this Saturday at the Netroots Nation Convention. It just started today, Thursday, at the Rio Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada. And for those of you that don't know, Netroots Nation is the fifth annual convention of what you might call the liberal or progressive blogosphere. So we're talking sites like Huffington Post and Daily Kos, Talking Points Memo, America Blog, Fire Dog Lake, all sorts of progressive entities out there will be there. I happen to be there on the Saturday when Senator Al Franken from Minnesota will be making his keynote address, which I am thrilled about because he's good enough, he's smart enough, and doggone it, I sure like him.
I totally agree with the Stuart Smiley.
Absolutely. Stuart Smiley, yeah. So one of the smartest senators, great author, comedian, actor, Al Franken. I'll see if I can stream that as well. We'll be streaming as much as we can from Netroots Nation on Saturday right here at live.normal.org. My panel, I'm on a marijuana policy panel with folks from Drug Policy Alliance and LEAP. Major Neil Franklin, our guest on today's show, is also going to be a panelist there. He's the head of LEAP now, so we'll have all sorts of great and interesting discussions there. Again, we'll try to stream it live for you. And if you're going to be in Vegas at Netroots Nation, follow me on Twitter, at Radical Russ, and I'll give you all the updates on what's happening, when the stream starts and stops, and all the great stuff that's happening in Las Vegas.
Break time.
Oh, yes, and for Cannabis Carry, yes, Pam's House Blend will be in the house. I'll be my good friend Pam Spaulding, who I co-blog with at the LGBT blog Pam's House Blend. She'll be there. We'll bring it all to you.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
...76% of Americans no longer support arresting and jailing marijuana smokers. And nearly as many support the medical patients having access to medical marijuana. And over 80% of our citizens now believe the war on drugs is an ineffective failure. So the question is, when will the government's misguided war on adult marijuana smokers finally end? When? Simple. When you and your like-minded friends, family, and co-workers get involved with an organization such as the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, also known as NORML. My name is Keith Stropp, and I founded the organization in 1970. Contact us at NORML, toll-free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's up-to-date webpage at www.normal.org.
Michael Phelps, Olympic superstar, 14 gold medals, world record holder. So much for that amotivational syndrome.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we bring you tunes for Groovin' Thursday, our salute to all the dopest beats and killer rhymes that we find in the best of rap, hip-hop, soul, R&B, and funk. Brought to you by the John Doe Radio Show in Denver, Colorado. Accurate and informative marijuana reform news and entertainment. Available on the THC Media Network and johndoeradio.com. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org or mail your CD to Normal Outreach, 4110 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard, number 161, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Now, here's some great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
John Doe Radio.
John Doe here with your Groovin' Thursday tune on Normal Show Live. Not much go together better than cannabis and video games. I know for a fact I play better and more on top of my game when I'm high, and I'm routinely owned when not. In fact, I make it a point to use both cannabis and video games in combo to lessen distractions and stress in my life, mixing great music to that, and you have the perfect setting. Which brings us to this week's tune by the group Ground Up, with their their soundtrack to video game life called Narcade. The duo's MC with a producer make up a group from Philadelphia, and their music proves they're no strangers to cannabis either. With a mixtape named Higher Ground that samples Five on it and songs like I Get Higher, this might be a group to jam for your next Stony Arcade session. Ground Up has huge potential, and the mixtapes they have released, especially I Get Higher, are some of my recent favorites to jam. Look out for their new album later this summer and find some more great stuff updated daily at groundupsounds.com. Until we meet again, remember, don't be selfish, Cali. Vote yes on 19. I'm John Doe. We love you, Normal. See ya.
Yeah, I can't wait for the days to come when we all smoke haze getting paid for fun. And mama knew she could raise a son that would make ends meet more ways than one. First things first, the world ain't sweet. Ride around the city with a girl named Peach. Girls like that try to strap in a saddle. She just wanna ride till we back at the castle.
Okay.
Bump my jam while you catch a lap dance from Miss Pac-Man. DSL, she deep throat, eating it, it like a damn blue ghost. And if she don't, then that's game over. Money ain't a game, but I'm the controller. Look into my eyes, I'm gunning for the prize like I'm running out of lives. Everywhere we go, we the show like knives. Pause for a minute and bake like pies. Besides, I play better when I'm high. Why would I lie? Can't reset, I'm on till I die. Till I die.
We still riding, man. Yo, back to the dungeon, rapping for fun. Never be the dude with a mask and a gun. More like the one saying, pass me the blunt. Most guys fall just as fast as they run. As they run. Ha. Yo, stop smoking, it's bad for your lungs. Asking me that's getting ass from a nun. It can't happen, can't stop rapping. Ask what you will, don't question a passion. Damn right, nothing less than great. Couple F's in the class made me test my fate. 2 years later, I rest my case. You can see my head's in a separate place.
I feel you, dog. Yeah. Look, okay. I guess I'll go.
I ain't one to chase them, but mama's so five star. I wanna play Rockstar games at my PlayStation. But then again, no, I'm much more Nintendo. Too old school, yeah, before I played with Pro Tools. I was doing what most do, chilling on a couch, bored as a mug, up and stuck up in the house. Pressing pause, trying to make calls, trying to flip an ounce. Now I get a chance, I'm trying to make it count. Lost in a maze, I'm trying to make it out. I'm taking my way, didn't see another route. Now I bet it all on a doubt. The funny thing is, it's really working out. No more games, I'm really working now. Well, not really. Shout out to Colorado, all the way from Philly. So I hope you enjoy riding with us. It's Ground Up. It's a nice show. Beach Links, what's good? Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson, and I need your help. Our marijuana laws are terribly unfair, and they make criminals out of law-abiding citizens. Nearly 2,000 Americans are arrested every day on marijuana charges, and we are unfairly destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of people simply because they smoke marijuana. These are not criminals. They are average citizens like you, good neighbors who work hard, raise families, pay taxes, and contribute to their communities. And it's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. We need your help to end marijuana prohibition once and for all. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORMAL, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
One of the most disturbing elements of the war on marijuana is how it has made police the enemy of otherwise law-abiding cannabis consumers. Fortunately, one group of police officers knows firsthand the futility of the drug war and reaches out to the community and to current law enforcement to end our war on drugs through legalization. It's time now to speak to one such officer in our continuing look at law enforcement against prohibition. Welcome back, everyone. 31 after the hour, and we're joined by Major Neil Franklin. He's a 33-year law enforcement veteran of both the Maryland State Police and the Baltimore Police Forces, and he is a speaker with Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. Neil, welcome back to the show.
Hey, glad to be here, Russ. How are you?
I'm doing absolutely fantastic, and I'm always glad to have our LEAP speakers here on the second and fourth Thursdays of the month. And we kind of generally wanted to talk about the future of LEAP. You've been involved with the organization for quite some time, and we're looking at states now that are talking openly about legalization of marijuana, especially out here on the West Coast. How is LEAP involved with that? Are they actively pushing for this legalization and speaking out on the West Coast, and what will the future be for LEAP if we pass legalization?
Well, yes, a couple things there. And let me begin with California, since that is very much on our radar and their recent initiative. See, this is extremely important because, you know, with this passage in California, I think it will begin the push across the country that's very much needed. We are actively out there. We are working with the California representatives who are in favor of marijuana legalization in California. We are speaking at various engagements out there, letting people know that law enforcement, many law enforcement officials do support this, and for the many reasons we need to. One of the things that we're doing is we are beginning to focus a little bit more on post-prohibition. You see, Russ, because this needs to change. We have to change in this country.
Yeah.
And hopefully beginning with California, we have to change. We can't afford it anymore. We can't afford it due to the body count. We can't afford the cost. We can't afford all the other surrounding issues. And I think you mentioned the disconnect between police and communities,
yeah,
between citizens, and all because of prohibition, so we can't afford this any longer. The future of LEAP, one of the things that we're going to focus on, in addition to moving these initiatives along in various states, beginning with California, we need to get more involved with many of the local organizations, many of the law enforcement organizations that are out there. As I speak to these police officers around the country who are still very much active in their communities, active in law enforcement, you know, off the record, they know that this has to change. They're tired of it. They're tired of putting their lives on the line. They're tired of the friction that they feel in these communities when they're out there trying to do good things. And if we can get more involved in their community, in internal communities, such as the FOP and all the other organizations that they have out there, I think that we can give them a sense of confidence for them to go out and speak, even though they still wear the uniform, as many LEAP members do.
Okay, and you mentioned that you're working with the friendly legislators there in California. I'm wondering about the opponents, which are primarily law enforcement, the California Narcotics Officers Association, prison guard unions, and so on. What is LEAP doing to try to break through that blue wall there in the opposition?
Well, unfortunately, with those particular groups, we haven't had much of any communication with. And, you know, we understand that there are some reasons, and I don't have a problem with saying it at all, especially when your day-to-day job involves going out here and enforcing the current prohibition laws. I think many people in these positions feel as though their livelihoods are at stake. You'll hear them talk about the potential of losing jobs if these laws change, but what they fail to realize is that wouldn't be the case. That, you know, whether we're talking corrections officials or whether we're talking those who are enforcing narcotics laws, their roles may change, of course, but their jobs won't be lost. First of all, our prisons are greatly overcrowded.
I mean,
and they always talk about how dangerous it is in these institutions due to overcrowding.
Sure.
And that's true. So now we would get the population down considerably. Their jobs won't be as dangerous, and that's a win-win for everyone, but their jobs won't be lost. As we talk about the police officers who work primarily narcotics cases, I mean, you know, when I came on, and of course, that's what I did in Maryland. Most of my time was spent in narcotics investigation. But for us, the real reason I came on was to do great things in communities. The real reason I came on was to solve those crimes, such as crimes against people, violent crimes against people, such as rape, child abuse, homicides, aggravated assaults, robberies, home invasions. That's what I really came on for, to make those communities better, not go around chasing people off of corners who are selling narcotics.
Yeah. And of course, Baltimore. We've seen the TV show on HBO, The Wire. People kind of associate that show with being a gritty look at how drug laws are enforced in this country. And you had a quote that was in your bio here that I wanted to touch upon, because I think it addresses the police mentality, what we see in law enforcement sometimes. You had a quote that says, "I'd been taught that the people who use and sell drugs are trash, and that we needed to put these people behind bars forever." How was that taught? Is it taught officially like that? Is it out in the open, or is it more just police attitudes that are ingrained through the community of law enforcement?
No, it's not taught officially in the academies, and I commanded the two largest academies, including Baltimore's Academy in the state of Maryland. And it's not taught in the classrooms. It's not taught behind those walls where the training occurs for 6 months. What happens is when these officers get out into the streets and they then are partnered with an officer out in the street who's been out there for a while, and they say, you know what, all of that stuff you learned in the academy, forget about it. We're going to show you how it's done out here on the street.
Okay.
Because unfortunately, prohibition has made it a violent community out there, you know, in the drug market. Prohibition has caused this violence, you know, out there. And so these officers that are out there, they feel that in order to survive, in order to protect themselves from that violence, they have to approach these situations from a very defensive position, sometimes to the point where it's an offensive position. And it's gotten to the point now where everyone in a community where you have open-air drug markets and violence, it's gotten to a point where they treat everyone as a suspect initially until it's proven otherwise. But by then, it's too late, because you've already violated someone's Fourth Amendment rights, and you've already, you know, established this wall in between you and those citizens in that community. And so, therefore, those officers, it's taught in the streets. You know, it's, you know, this is how we have to treat these people.
Yeah.
You know, this is what we have to do.
And they
say it's survival, you know, and it doesn't have to be that way.
It doesn't. And we see this in study after study, the New York data that we've talked about here on the show, with in Philadelphia as well, the disproportionate arrest and harassment of minorities in the war on drugs. And I've always wondered, you know, minorities bear the brunt of this war on drugs as far as stop and frisks and being incarcerated and being sentenced and so on. And yet when it comes to fighting against that, to come up with a solution against that, the polling in California, for example, shows that among Latinos, they have the lowest support for passing the legalization of marijuana. In African-American communities, we see similar numbers. Why the disconnect? How do we get through to minority communities to show them that ending prohibition is in their best interest more than mine as a white person?
I agree with you, Russ. I've seen the very same thing, whether you're on the West Coast or whether you're here on the East Coast in Baltimore. It has been a challenge, and I think that first it's due to a lack of really good information about the harmful effects of prohibition.
Mm-hmm.
I think for some reason we're dealing with a learning curve here, is, you know, it relates to this information getting out. I think that there are very few forums in which that information does get out or has the potential to get out in these communities, but I'd like to say that we are beginning to make some really good headway with certain branches of the NAACP, for instance.
Oh, really?
I think that, yes, actually, one of the main supporters is the California president Alice Huffman.
Oh, that's right.
For the NAACP, for that initiative. And I've had some conversations with her, and here's, this is really interesting. When I first started talking to her about a month ago, I called her, and I introduced myself, and she had no idea there were so many police officers in support of this initiative. She had never heard of LEAP, and we had a very good conversation. And by the end of it, I mean, she's like, wow, this is great. I never knew it. And that is the same across this country. Even though we've reached out to many, I guess you can say, many branches or the head of the NAACP here in Washington, D.C., the word just hasn't traveled. So we're really going to work on that. We're doing some work in Florida now with the NAACP. We're beginning some work here in Baltimore with the NAACP, and we're just going to start moving around at some of the local branches and getting the word out and bring it from the ground floor up. And that's just an example of one organization, but we're pretty much doing the same with many others, too. So we're going to get there. It's just a matter of having the number of people out there within the different communities to share this information, to get in front of particular organizations and give them the facts, give them the history, give them the of what it, you know, the picture of what it would look like in post-prohibition, which I'm really excited about. As a matter of fact, my conversation now is pretty much almost always about post-prohibition because, like I said at the beginning of this conversation, we got to do this. We don't have a choice. Yeah. We're losing this country.
Yeah, a luxury we can't afford anymore. And, you know, I don't want it to be misconstrued either as if I'm blaming anyone for not standing up. I've often thought that, you know, if you've already got a target on your back, you know, and you get the dealing with driving while brown and all these other terrible things that you have to deal with, that maybe putting a normal sticker on your book isn't the thing you're going to do. So I understand that aspect as well. You know, the self-preservation, absolutely. Neil Franklin here is from LEAP and also a longtime Baltimore police officer, and you said you had so many promotions that you seemed like you were always at a new position, but primarily working in narcotics. I did want to focus on one thing in your bio here that I thought was really interesting, and that is your work with the Faith-Based Community Council on Law Enforcement and the Place of Grace Church, and I'm wondering maybe if you have any insight on how we get our message across of ending prohibition to faith communities.
Well, actually, LEAP, we've just begun our cops and clergy program. And I did a trial run at a Presbyterian church in Baltimore, Govan's Presbyterian Church, about a month and a half, maybe 2 months back. And it was well received. It went over very well. I think that historically people thought that it would be immoral to allow people to use mind-altering substances. But here's the thing. When it comes to religion, I use the word religion per se, just for the sake of this conversation, but when it comes to that, in the world of Christianity, it relates to morals and morality. First of all, God gives you freedom of choice. That's first. Second, I think it would be immoral to know that there is a viable solution out there which would save literally thousands upon thousands of lives here in the U.S., Mexico, South America, other countries around the world, to know that that solution exists and not to make it happen. And third, I think it's also immoral to, how can I say this, you mentioned prisons.
Yeah.
I think it was in your opening there. You talked about prisons.
Yes.
Jesus is not for putting people in prison unless, and this is my opinion, from what I know of the Bible, and I read it as much as I can, unless you have to protect society from someone who is extremely dangerous. But for the most part, he's not about prison. He's not about locking people up by the thousands. Well, I guess we could say by the millions, huh?
Yeah.
By the millions for people who decide to put something, which is a plant that God has put on this planet, for them deciding to put that in their bodies, it's immoral to put someone in prison for that. So those are three points. when I talk about that in front of the faith communities, they tend to agree.
That's excellent.
No issue.
That is
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
Legalize marijuana? Prove it. Join Normal today at NORML.org, and your donation will help us spread the growing truth about cannabis. Free speech ain't free, you know.
Free the ganja tree, it's the healing of the nation. Free the cali weed, good for meditation. Free the pot smokers, they're in a delight. Lighting up the chalice, they will keep no malice.
Free the marijuana.
Come on, say,
free the marijuana.
Hear me, say,
free the marijuana.
Come on, say,
free the marijuana.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
Welcome back, everyone. 45 after the hour. Big thanks to Major Neil Franklin for appearing on our show. That was a recorded interview from May 27th, 2010. This Saturday, I'll be on a panel with Major Franklin from LEAP, Stephen Gutwillig, and Jill Harris from the Drug Policy Alliance, and Joe Walker, I believe, from Fire Dog Lake, the progressive blog. We'll be on a panel on Saturday, I believe, at 1:45 p.m. at the Rio Hotel at Netroots Nation. So that'll be a lot of fun. We'll have it on live here at live.normal.org. I have confirmed that there will be free Wi-Fi, so we will be on live streaming from Las Vegas. Should be a lot of fun. Also, before I get off on the rant, before I forget, tomorrow we've got a very special guest, Madeline Martinez from Oregon Normal, and the USA Cannabis Cafe will be here. Oh, it's exciting news.
I'm giddy.
I'm just positively schoolgirl giddy over
yeah.
it. So we'll tell you all about that tomorrow, but let me get off on the rant here, and this is the insane anti-Prop 19 ravings of J. Craig Canada and the I Gots Mine crowd. Now, you know I've been writing on Huffington Post and on the Normal front page about Proposition 19, the California initiative to legalize marijuana. I can't make that clear enough to some of these people. Legalize marijuana. As in, you can grow marijuana in your home and have it on your person and smoke it in private, legally. But still, there's these people like J. Craig Canada who appear on the blogs and they write their own papers here, criticizing Prop 19 and encouraging people to vote for their own continued criminal prohibition. It's the I Gots Mine crowd. It's a lot of these people, and J. Craig Canada is involved with dispensaries and makes some money off of them. So, like Upton Sinclair wrote, it is difficult to convince a man of something when his job depends on him not understanding it. But these kind of guys are coming out here and trying to convince people that if you vote for Prop 19, everything becomes terrible. Prop 215 goes away. Teenagers will start being locked up in prison. It'll be awful. And cats and dogs will live together. Disasters of biblical proportions. Let me dispense with some of this stuff. And this is up on Huffington Post. We've been having a quite a long discussion, Mr. Canada and myself on the post. I pointed out that, you know, one of these people came up with the conspiracy theory. This is my favorite conspiracy theory, by the way. Normal doesn't really want to legalize marijuana because then they'd be out of a job and lose their power and their cushy lifestyles. Uh-huh.
Our cushy lifestyles?
Yeah, something.
Well,
like,
it's filled with cush.
Well, we have cush. Yeah. Yeah. There's that. Yeah, the fringe benefits are pretty good, but let me tell you, the salary sucks.
It does suck, I'll tell you.
But anyway, the theory here is that Normal doesn't really want to fight for legalization because it's a bunch of lawyers, and if it's legal, then lawyers wouldn't have any jobs. Right? Because, you know, like, divorce is legal, but yet lawyers have lots of jobs. Anyway, but when I come back, I came back and said, look, you know, Normal's the marijuana smokers lobby. As long as there's marijuana smokers, there will be a Normal. Might have to change our name to, you know, National Organization for Responsible Marijuana Lovers, but still, there will be a Normal. I mean, look at the beer wholesalers lobby. They're a huge lobby. Beer's legal.
We will always protect these laws. Even if it's federally legal, we'll always be here to protect these
laws. That's right. You got to protect the laws because somebody will try to take them away. You know, you can't just rest on your laurels. And as we see with Prop 19, it's not perfect. There'll be things that need to be tweaked and fixed. So there's a reason to keep us around. Anyway, in response to that, I said, look, we're the marijuana smokers lobby. So long as people are smoking marijuana, normal will exist. This was J. Craig Canada's response. So that's why they support an initiative that prohibits smoking in public or in sight of anyone under 21, because they're the smokers lobby? Got it. So, really, this opposition that Mr. Canada and other people feel is because they don't want to be, they won't be able to smoke in public with teenagers? That's what you're fighting for? Look, you got to understand that when we're trying to make these radical changes in law and society, I know, we smoke pot and we like it a lot, and we know that it's beautiful and it's a wonderful herb and it doesn't harm anyone and no one died, etc., etc. But to the majority of voters out there that are uninformed, ignorant, uneducated, marijuana is a dangerous drug to them. That's what they think it is. So we are making to them a radical, radical change. So we can't just jump right out of the gate with, all right, legalize it, age 18, anybody can grow as much as they want, hemp is completely legal, free all the pot prisoners, like the Jack Herer Initiative does, which is a beautiful initiative, but look, that's not your first step. Okay? Gotta walk before you can run, people. So to think that we would vote for the continued criminalization of every adult above the age of 21 because they wouldn't be able to smoke in public or with teenagers? That's why you're opposing Prop 19? Another thing that they oppose here is they say, oh, well, it'll lead to taxes. There'll be taxes on marijuana. There'll be taxes, and you shouldn't tax marijuana. And he points out that the only state that taxes prescription pharmaceuticals is Illinois at 1%. In California, food, unless it's a meal in a restaurant, is not taxed. And your point is what? Look, cannabis as a medicine or cannabis as a recreational product may end up being taxed. That's the way it goes. Well, if it passes and you don't like the tax, now it's legal and you can lobby to get it changed. See, the whole point is, let's get it legal. We can work things out. We can work the details of this out. Prop 19 actually has language in it that allows it to be modified, not just by the initiative process, but also by the legislature, okay? So they can continue to fix this law and make changes as necessary. Now, of course, that brings out the naysayers. Oh, they'll do terrible things. They'll make these terrible changes. No, there's a very well laid out set of purposes in Prop 19, and the only power they have is to amend it to further those purposes. Now, another thing that we have here is people that say that, oh, well, Prop 19 will make the dispensaries go, or make the dispensaries go away, and you wouldn't be able to sell to any medical marijuana patients between the ages of 18 and 20 and so forth and so on. No. All your Prop 215 rights will still be there after this initiative passes. It was very carefully thought out here to not do anything to take away from the people who already got theirs, okay? This is to legalize it for the 90% of us that are healthy and don't feel comfortable deceiving a doctor, that don't feel like we need to get an MD's permission as to whether or not we use cannabis.
I just want to interject here, Russ. I didn't feel comfortable doing it. And look at me, for Christ's sake. I'm a one-eyed, non-peeing Jew. And I didn't feel comfortable doing it. And, you know, I know lots of young kids who have their medical their Prop 215 down in California, and they're not nearly at the level I am, you know. So, I mean, I didn't feel comfortable asking my doctor. He told me it was good, and he signed the paper, and I was still making excuses.
Yeah, and we want to go on with this. Let me take a look at some other comments here. This is from Lucy McFarland. It's pointed out that there's one of the things that's a big sticking point for a lot of these people is the fact that it creates punishments for people above the age of 21. If they are to hand marijuana to someone between the ages of 18 and 20, they could be locked up 6 months in jail and $1,000 fine, where currently under the pseudo decriminalization of California, that would just be an infraction. Well, look, when you put together an initiative, you can't just aim it at the people who are going to support it. You got to aim it at those people in the middle, right? The people on the fence. And the opposition is going to come out and say, as soon as you try to legalize marijuana, what about the children? Oh God, there'll be pot in the high schools. Like there isn't already, but work with me here. So when you craft this initiative, you have to have something where you can say, no, we are serious about this being for adult use and we're going to keep it away from minors. But I had pointed out that this punishment for 21-year-olds giving to people between the ages of 18 and 20 would mirror the punishments for alcohol. Lucy McFarland called me on that and said, same rights as beer drinkers must be why Prop 19 is much stricter than any beer law. A 21-year-old would not go to prison for passing a beer to one a bit younger than he, but he can for passing a joint under Prop 19. So I went and used this thing that George Bush taught me called the Google. And when I looked in the Google, I found the laws for 21-year-olds in California passing alcohol to someone between the ages of 18 and 20. And here they are. In Section 25658, subsection A here, except as otherwise provided, every person who sells, etc., gives alcohol to a person under the age of 21 is guilty of a misdemeanor, which is exactly what Prop 19 would do for passing a joint, make you guilty of a misdemeanor. Section C, any person who violates the subdivision by giving alcohol to a person under the age of 21, and then that person under the age of 21 consumes the alcohol and causes great bodily injury or death to himself or another person, is guilty of a misdemeanor that can be punished by a minimum term of 6 months, a fine of $1,000. So what Prop 19 is doing is it is equating the giving of a joint from a 21-year-old to an 18-year-old to giving a beer to an 18-year-old, and then that 18-year-old gets in a wreck, kills himself or someone else, or hurts himself or someone else, or does something under the influence of alcohol to kill or hurt himself or someone else. I'll agree with you. I will grant that's a little strict. I think that's a little much. I don't see why we couldn't have the same thing with Prop 19, having it, if you pass a joint to someone younger, you're guilty of a misdemeanor, and you get community service, which is what they get for the beer. They get like a 24-hour community service. I'll grant you that. It's a problem. Is it enough of a problem, though, to continue arresting every single person above the age of 21 who has more than an ounce? Is it enough of a problem to continue giving misdemeanor conviction records to every single person 21 years and older, even if they don't share with anyone? Is it enough of a reason to take away from the police their ability to use the sight, smell of marijuana or paraphernalia as an excuse for a probable cause and shakedown of adults? Is it enough to get rid of the right for every 21-year-old person to be able to grow their own 5x5 garden and keep all of the harvest that they produce therein? Is it enough of a problem to change it so that we, or to keep what we have now, which is the prohibition of marijuana for adults? I don't think so. This is one of those situations where when Prop 19 passes, that is something that we can work on. We can work to change that provision of the law. But don't throw the baby out with the bathwater here. Don't cut off your nose to spite your face. Don't reach for more cliches when the solution is obvious. Vote for legalization. It just amazes me. I have to keep coming back on the show to convince people that smoke marijuana that they should vote for their own liberation. It's just mind-boggling to me that this has to be done. Now, in some other news, the California Legislative Analyst's Office has come out and certified some of the things that we've been saying about Prop 19, that it would reduce police expenses, they could put their attention toward more serious crimes, that some money could be raised for this for localities. And that brings me to another point about this Prop 19. We get a lot of scare tactics about the small-time growers. That, oh, the poor small-time growers. They work so hard growing their plants and selling them for $3,500 a pound when they grow 4 to 5 pounds every harvest. Oh, those poor people living at home who don't have to pay taxes and don't have to, you know, be in a commute all day like the rest of us going to work. And look, I feel for you. I think that if you want to be a cottage grower, a small-time grower, that's a great thing. But you do not deserve to have that at the expense of locking up adults, ruining their lives with a drug conviction. You do not deserve to have that built on the unlevel playing field of a prohibitionary market that rewards you for risk. And that risk being that people go to jail if they grow a plant in their house. What a lot of people don't like here is the notion that the small-time person who might buy an ounce a month would never be stopping by their door again to give them that easy money. Somebody on a comment put it really well. They're not afraid of anything except for the easy pot grower lifestyle is about to end. And that's true. It's going to become a business like anything else. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. All right, everybody, for everyone here at Normal.org, for Ganja John and Cannabis Carrie, thanks for joining us here for the show. We're here every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, with replays every 2 hours. The stream is up 24/7. Send in a friend request if you want to get involved in the chat. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Take it on one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.